Tonight on Coast to Coast, we're going to talk to one of the world's most famous reformed hackers, Kevin Mitnick. He's written a story about his life, Ghost in the Wires, his adventures as the world's most wanted hacker. Get ready for that on Coast to Coast AM. Well, let me tell you about our guest, Kevin Mitnick, the world's most famous reformed hacker. He's been the subject of countless news and magazine articles published throughout the world. Kevin is a security consultant to corporations worldwide. He's the co-founder of The Defensive Thinking, which is an LA-based consulting firm. Kevin has even testified to the Senate Committee on Governmental Affairs on the need for legislation to ensure the security of the government's information systems. Here he is back on Coast to Coast. Kevin, I hate calling you a hacker. You're a good guy. I've grown to like you.
Yeah, but I'm still hacking every day. The only difference is I get permission to do it and test the security of my client's system.
That's right. You get paid for it now.
I get paid for it instead of going to jail for it. I mean, what more could I ask for?
How old are you now? Let me ask.
Oh, my God. I just turned 48.
Oh, you're old man. Old man.
An old hacker.
How old were you when you started this thing, hacking away?
Actually, 16 years old is when I entered this hobby of phone freaking, which was kind of the predecessor to hacking. And this was exploring the telephone network and finding all the cool things you can do with it.
All right, what is phone freaking?
Phone freaking is like experimenting with the phone system, understanding how the entire infrastructure is put together. And my favorite thing was actually to pull pranks on friends by hacking the phone system. And one of my favorite pranks was to change the class of service of a friend's home phone to that of a payphone. So whenever the friend or his parents try to make a phone call, it would say, "Please deposit 25 cents."
How did you do that without giving away the store here?
Well, I actually called up a central office posing as an employee at Pacific Telephone and Telegraph.
Amazing.
Before Pacific Bell. And I basically told the tech, I need you to change the line class code on this phone number to this.
And you knew what you were talking about, so he probably figured you are who you are.
Exactly. It was, very easy. And this was a technique called social engineering where the phone freaker used manipulation, influence, and deception to get somebody on the inside to comply with the request. And it was usually to do something that, to a friend's line or to get an unlisted number. Like one of the favorite, challenges I gave to myself as a youngster was finding all the unlisted phone numbers of like movie stars just to see if I could do it, or musicians like Bruce Springsteen, Lucille Ball, Roger Moore. And it wasn't like I wanted to call them and, have a conversation. I just figured, they must have the hardest numbers to find. So if I can get them, it was like climbing Mount Everest.
And you got them?
Oh, yeah. I remember calling Bruce Springsteen's house in New Jersey, and I go, "Hey, is Bruce there?" And they go, "One moment." And he got on the line. And I go, "Hey, Bruce, this is a fan. You do wonderful work. I just wanted to say hi."
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. And I used to do even with radio stations. I used to get their hotline numbers, right? Get their hotlines. I remember calling Rick Dees when he was with Kiss FM years ago. And, "Hey, Rick, this is Kevin again. I want you to play this song." And he's going, "How did you get our hotline number? How did you get our hotline number?" And it was just like, hey, I was a kid. And it was
unbelievable. So you did, in those days, we didn't have technology for you to break into things. You talked your way into it then.
Exactly. Well, the phone company was technical and technical in some degree. And actually, as a young kid, I was fascinated with magic. I mean, I used to ride my bike to the magic store on the weekend and just stay there and camp out to learn the secrets to the trick, because I love fooling people for fun.
Well, I loved magic too, Kevin, but I didn't end up being a computer hacker because I was not smart enough, I guess.
Well, this is how it worked for me, and I know I took a little bit of a different direction than others out there, is I met a kid in high school who was a phone freaker, and he showed me all these tricks he can do with the telephone, and it simply amazed me. Like, he was able to get my mom's unlisted number. If he had a phone number, he can get called a secret number within the phone company called the CNA Bureau. And just by knowing the internal number, you can get the name and address. He could do funny things with my phone. Like, if I call forwarded my phone to a friend, he could break through it. And then they had these things called looparounds. And what those were their phone company test circuits. So if you call on one number and your friend calls on another, you're secretly joined. So you could, like, talk to other phone freaks and maintain anonymity. And to me, this was like a whole new world of exploration. So because of my interest in magic, I wanted to manipulate the phone company to do these tricks on friends, like I, you know, just mentioned about changing their home phone to a payphone. And I remember also intercepting directory assistance in Providence, Rhode Island. So I figured out, I worked out a way when somebody called 411, rather than getting the operator, they got me. And as a 17-year-old kid, you could imagine what type of fun you could have. And I remember, you know, I'd say, what city? They'd say Providence. I'd ask for the listing. You know, they'd say Bill Smith. And then I'd say, yeah, one moment, please. Oh, that number is 554-21537. They'd go, huh? I'd go, that number is 554-21537. And then the confused person at the other end of all, how do I dial a half? You know, and it just escalated from there. So.
And you probably gave out phone numbers to pizza parlors instead of the person they were calling, things like that.
Oh, yeah. We just, like, pulled, you know, prank after prank after prank. And you know, this was, again, teenager years. And then when the phone company started moving over to electronic switching systems, that's when I became interested in computers. And, in fact, when I was in high school, another student said, hey, Kevin, you'd probably like computers because you like messing around with these phones. And I wasn't really interested at the time, so he introduced me to the computer science instructor at Monroe High School in Los Angeles. And I remember I told him I wanted to take class, and he started asking me about my prerequisites, and I didn't fulfill them at the time. And my friend started telling me, because he was there at this meeting, he said, show the teacher what tricks you can do with the phone. So I started doing, like, all these, like, crazy tricks, you know, calling computers through the phone system and all these other crazy things. And then the teacher actually waived the prerequisites, let me into class, and he's probably regretting that decision as we speak.
That's right. He could have stopped you right there.
Yeah, and I remember the first programming assignment that we had in class was to find the first 100 Fibonacci numbers, and I thought that was the most boring thing to do. So instead, I decided to write a program to steal other students' passwords. Not because I wanted to do anything with their accounts, but I just thought it would be cool.
Right.
And so I worked on this project. I put in a lot of time into it because, again, it was one of my first introductory programming courses. And I finally did it. And then by the time it was done, I didn't finish the Fibonacci assignment. So I said, hey, I'm sorry I didn't get the assignment done, but I wrote this program instead. Let me show you how it works. And he was clearly impressed, and he actually gave me an A. So imagine, George, imagine if you were due to do that today, you'd probably get arrested.
You were on the spot.
An A. No, right. So I started at a time of hacking when it was 100% legal. There were no laws against it, and your teachers actually encouraged that behavior in school.
He was mesmerized by you, Kevin. There's no doubt.
I don't know. I mean, I guess he loved it. He got frustrated with me, okay, because I remember I loved playing computer games as a youngster. And what I worked out is I wanted to dial into USC's computers because they had a much better gaming library. So we, in our computer lab at school, now remind you, this is 1980, we had an all of
this is like computer infancy, wasn't it?
This was before the IBM PC was released to the market, right?
Jeez.
So that's like 1981.
Okay.
So we had these teletype computers. There were no monitors, and we had an acoustic coupler modem at 110 baud. We used to dial up to the school's mainframe, mini computer, actually.
Is this where you put the phone in the modem?
Exactly. Remember the old days?
I remember that.
Okay. So you put the phone in the acoustic coupler, and this is the way we called into the school computer. So instead, I wanted to dial into USC. So what I used to do is I figured out you can call the operator from the phone because you couldn't dial 9 to get an outside line. It was restricted. But I called the operator. I pretended to be the teacher and asked them to connect me to the dial-up number for USC. And then the teacher actually figured out what was going on because, again, it was teletype. So he actually looked at the paper and realized
it was him.
That instead of doing my work, instead of other kids in class doing their work, everyone was playing games, on USC's computer. And, this lasted for a couple weeks. And the teacher walks into class, and he has a huge smile on his face. And he's purchased one of these phone locks. Remember the old locks that would go into the number one in the dial, in the rotary dial of the phone?
Because this was even and there before. Was a key that went into it, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So he proudly places the lock into the phone, and he told the whole class that he finally found the device that's going to stop Kevin from playing games. So, of course, I had to show him up, right? And what I asked the instructor, I go, so what's the number of the school? And he goes, why? And I go, I want to show you something cool. And he gave me the telephone number. Then with the switch hook, I simply pulsed out the number. You know, if I wanted to dial a 3, I'd hit, fast, click the switch hook 3 times. If I want to dial a 6, click the switch hook, six times.
Yeah.
So I was able to actually hand him the phone, and it was ringing. It was the main switchboard of the school. And I thought it was cute and funny, but the teacher was clearly embarrassed, and his face turned a dark shade of red. And then he took the phone and ripped it out of the wall and actually threw it across the room. He was pretty angry.
Now he was,
I didn't expect that reaction.
Yeah, now he was turning on you.
Yeah, because, I just always had enjoyed, one-upping the teacher because it was fun to do, and all the other students liked doing it. And they didn't like doing it. They liked watching me do it, actually. And this is kind of how I started, was wanting to play around with the teacher, play with his head. I remember another program I wrote simulated, it pretended I was logging into a bank. I forgot which bank it was. And the program pretended like I was transferring funds from bank accounts.
Oh, wow.
So I brought the teacher into class. I said, look, Mr. Chris, I figured out how I could move money in banks. And he's watching this. And I'm transferring bounces, but of course
it wasn't there, right?
Simulation.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I used to love driving this guy crazy.
He thought it was real?
For a moment.
He probably wanted to do it himself.
Yeah, until everyone started laughing, he realized, again. So I was kind of the class clown in computer science class, and again, I think he kind of regrets the decision today, but that's how I actually got started as a hacker. Was my love for pulling pranks, my love for understanding the telephony and the phone company of how everything worked, and just the desire to learn. I was the hacker who loved learning new things, loved challenges, and I loved adventure.
At no point, Kevin, did you ever want to hurt anybody doing this, did you?
No. I mean, at times we pull pranks on friends and stuff like that, like maybe turn their phone off or do this type of, kid type stuff, but it wasn't really, it was just, people playing with each other, that type of thing, but
yeah.
It was never writing a computer virus or a worm, getting into a company and destroying data, or actually trying to make money, from doing this type of activity, because the hacker ethic back in my day was you don't do it for profit and you don't do it to harm anybody. But, of course, today that's, all changed.
It sure has. Would you say you were obsessed with hacking?
I don't know about obsessed.
Did it consume you?
It did consume me. It consumed what I wanted to do. I remember I was working at a job in Van Nuys, California, and I remember I would, after work, the computer lab at Cal State University Northridge was open, for another hour. So I remember speeding from Van Nuys to Northridge, which was, what would you say, 10, 15 miles, and just to get 15 minutes of computer time, because by the time I got there, parked the car, walked through all the parking lots at the university, I'd have 15 minutes. So I just loved computers so much, and I wanted to learn. I had this passion to learn that it just was consuming, and I just had this intense passion for it.
That is amazing. I've known you, Kevin, for what, 8 years now, I think.
Yeah, so I remember. I remember being on your show several times. I think one time I hosted a show there at Coast to Coast,
mm-hmm.
and And I remember being on with Art Bell, you know, before that.
Yeah,
and,
you go.
I love
you,
Coast to Coast. I'm so honored that you're having me back again.
Well, this is fun, and it's, you know, it's a full show for you tonight, so you're going to go the distance with us. But, I mean, you have, since the day I started talking to you, and I've talked to our executive producer, Lisa, I said, you know what? I like this guy. There's just a real, genuine feeling I get every time I talk to you. And it's amazing, and we'll get into this. I mean, you went to jail for this and everything else. Your life must have been turned upside down, but we'll get into that. But did technology make it easy for you to do what you did?
Yeah, of course. I mean, that's what kind of, that was the heart of what I was doing, was kind of manipulating both technology and actually and people behind the technology, because when I was in this phone freaking hobby, if you will, that's where I learned, you know, the technique of social engineering, of being able to talk the terminology and lingo of other employees, find out, you know, the secret numbers to internal departments. And immediately, when you would call an internal department at the phone company, they would assume that you're internal.
Right.
And so that was great for trust and credibility. And then when you learn the lingo and how to ask questions and how to, you know, how to frame, you know, what you're going after, then it was easy to do. And I mean, this is done today. Private investigators use information brokers, and these information brokers get confidential information. Look at the Rupert Murdoch case, you know, hacking voicemails. I'm sure that information brokers were involved in this. And what they do even today, even though it's now criminalized, you know, social engineering phone companies now, I think a few years ago, they signed a federal law that criminalizes this because of this fiasco at HP.
Mm-hmm.
And now information brokers still do it. You could probably find on the internet, if you really looked hard enough, that if you wanted to get a friend's phone records, you could still do it. And how they do this is not usually by hacking into a phone company computer. They're not, you know, going to a phone company office and trying to bribe an employee. What they're doing is they're using this technique, social engineering, that works 99.9% of the time.
Technology is so important nowadays, Kevin, yet the things that they can do, I'm convinced, for example, that we might have been responsible for getting into the Iran nuke program and shutting down some of their systems. I bet people are trying to hack into our electric grid right now to shut it down. It's dangerous, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Stuxnet is what you're talking about.
And yeah.
I thought that was a brilliant, brilliantly done piece of malicious code. And I think it's kind of the foot in the door of the public awareness of cyber warfare.
And it is.
You know, and you have to think, well, Stuxnet was identified, written about, you know, talked about in the media, you know, over and over again. What's out there that we don't know about? That, I think, is more interesting.
Kevin, when we come back, I want to ask you, what was your first run-in with the law? How did it happen? What went wrong? Our special guest tonight, we're talking to reformed hacker Kevin Mitnick. His latest work, Ghost in the Wires, his website, mitnicksecurity.com, is linked up for you on coasttocoastam.com. Truly amazing, the things that he's been able to do with computers. But we're going to talk about his life, and then we're going to talk about how the computer world can affect all of us and what Kevin's doing to try to stop some of these other hackers from screwing up our lives. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And Hurricane Irene upgraded to a Category 2 now as it's closing in on the United States, so we'll keep monitoring that. So, Kevin, what was the first run-in with law enforcement? What happened?
Well, actually, it was at Cal State University Northridge when I was still in high school. Is remember that program I was talking about where I got an A from the instructor?
Mm-hmm.
And what this program was is what we call a login simulator. Today, it's kind of like phishing. But this is rewinding the clock to 1979. And what I was doing is I was perfecting this program to work on the school's computers at Cal State University Northridge. And I was actually allowed to use the computers because I went to the computer science chair, a guy named Wes Hampton, back in you know, back when I was in high school. And I asked, I said, listen, I'm in high school. I'd like to purchase an account, a computer account, so I could use it at the school. And he told me, no, you have to be a student. And then I said, well, listen, I'm in high school. I'd like to learn more about computers. And in the end, he actually gave me his personal account to use, which, again, he's probably regretting today. And what I was doing is I was working on perfecting this program that when a student would go up to a terminal and log into the computer, they wouldn't be talking to the computer's operating system when they're signing in. They would unknowingly be talking to a computer program that I wrote that pretended to be the computer's operating system, and then it would request the person to put in their username and password. And then it would capture it, and it would log them in. So anyway, since I was working on this and I was kind of new to programming, actually some of the lab monitors, which were Cal State University Northridge students, would actually help me debug the program. And they knew exactly what it was doing, and they thought it was so cool. And eventually, when I got it debugged, and now it was time to put it into action to test it out. And what happened is one of the lab monitors went to the system administrator at the school, and I couldn't believe this. You know, as I'm sitting there testing the program, the whole lab was stormed by Cal State University Northridge police. You know, and you know, show us your student ID. Well, I don't have any, and I told them, well, I have permission to be here. And they actually detained me and called my mom, who had to pick me up. And they really couldn't do anything because I was allowed to be there, and there was no laws against hacking at the time.
Right.
This was actually the first computer crime law was like in 1984.
How did they know that you were in there doing what you were doing?
A lab monitor told them.
Oh, that's how they told them. Okay.
Yeah, one of the guys that was actually helping debug the program and thought it was cool.
He ratted on you.
Decided to rat me out. Yeah, and so that was my kind of first run-in with the law. But one of the most humorous hacks I think that I ever did wasn't it didn't involve a computer, and this actually involved radio. And I think you know this, and I'm an avid amateur radio operator.
Yeah.
And what I used to do as a kid is I'd take my 2-meter amateur radio and modify it so it can go out of band. So which that means is I could transmit and receive on frequencies outside the ham band. And one of my favorite frequencies was for McDonald's drive-up windows. So you could imagine, again, this is the prankster in Kevin Mitnick, imagine, you know, people driving up to McDonald's, and I could overtake the drive-up window, and the poor...
Did you have to be close by the restaurant?
Not really. I could be like a quarter mile away. And I was only running 5 watts in an external antenna and on the car, and I was able to overpower
their headset. That's funny. Now, you would take over at the point where they were ordering from in front of that display?
Yeah, a customer would drive up, and I would say, can I take your order, please? Right. And I would proceed to take the customer's order, you know, and if it was the police, you know, because I could see them drive up, you know, I'd start telling them, well, today, officers, we don't have any donuts. You know, so we have nothing to serve you.
Did they laugh?
No, they didn't laugh, especially when sometimes they would drive up. And right before I'd say, can I take your order? I'd say, hide the cocaine, hide the cocaine, hide the cocaine. and it just, you know, having fun actually as a kid messing with people. And it got to the point, George, where the manager in one of the McDonald's in Van Nuys, California, in the San Fernando Valley, actually went outside the store, started canvassing the parking lot looking for the person that's messing with his store.
Could they hear you, Kevin, from in the store? They could hear your voice.
The guy wearing the McDonald's headset could hear everything, but couldn't overpower me. So they're listening to me tell the cops, hide the cocaine, right?
And taking orders, and he obviously wasn't taking the order. The car would drive up, right, to pick up its order, and there was nothing ready.
Oh, yeah, I'd take their order. I'd say, oh, you're the 25th customer today. Your order's free. Please drive forward. You know, and, you know, just come up with all these
antics. My God, you must have jammed their cars.
That, well, Not really, but the guy comes out, he's looking into the parking lot, doesn't see a thing. I'm across the street, like on the, you know, the huge inner street called Ventura Boulevard in the Fernando Valley. And my friends and I are in the car. We're laughing our butts off. And then the guy doesn't see anything. He puts his face and he's looking into the speaker as if the speaker is possessed. And of course, I couldn't help it. I key down the mic. I go, "What the hell are you looking at?" And the guy, you know, flies back.
He jumped back.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is the kind of hacking, you know, that I never was bucking.
That's hilarious. Gosh, if there was a camera running, that would be a reality TV show.
Oh, you're not kidding me.
Oh,
I mean,
my God.
This was hilarious.
How long did you do that? I mean, you know what it's like for people when they want their fast food hamburgers. I did have
like, you know, and your kids, right? So, you know, I did like crazy stuff, like, you know, some lady would drive through and, you know, we'd ask her, "Well, if you show us something, your order's free." And at one point, the lady ran into the store with a baseball bat. I don't know what happened. We drove off there.
Freaking out, but, yeah. Oh, my God.
But, you know, we're kids.
So you would stay there for what, 10 minutes maybe and then take off?
10, 15 minutes, you know, get our laughs and, you know, just laugh about it and just, you know, move on. It wasn't like we'd camp out at McDonald's for hours at a time.
Do you think that they eventually reported you to corporate? Or did they keep it quiet?
I have no idea. You know, I mean, we were never identified, or they never changed their system. They're probably on the same frequency today. I assume. I don't know. I haven't really looked at it because I have no reason. I don't care. But I don't know what happened. But I remember we, you know, as kids, we used to, you know, once in a while pass the McDonald's and have fun with them.
That's,
you know,
hilarious.
Just to have fun. You know, we weren't trying to, you know, mess with them too badly, you know, to cause, you know, a line of cars out the door. But, you know,
somewhere along the line, Kevin, you stepped on somebody's toes, right? What happened?
Yeah, and eventually I started in this hacking endeavor, and my goal was to be the best at circumventing security. So the serious mistakes I've made was to go after the source code of operating systems. And the source code is like the secret to the Orange Julius, if you remember the secret powder.
Yeah.
Right? The source code. And I wanted to study the source code to look at the developers' comments, because they write, you know, like if there was a security flaw that they identified and fixed. I wanted to be able to analyze the code and also to modify the code if I wanted, you know, to put in some sort of backdoor into the operating system. So what I did is I hacked into companies that developed operating systems to figure out what security flaws I could find. And what ended up happening is I got into a lot of hot water, you know, of course, because they eventually found out who did it. And that was because another friend of mine told on me. And that's when I first experienced the crazy, you know, federal judicial system, to the point when I was arrested for this. I end up in court in Los Angeles, and I'm expecting to get bail, right? Because, you know, it's the first time I was in trouble.
Sure. So, did you have a lawyer, or did you do this yourself?
No, it was a public defender.
Okay.
Like a guy that you just see for 5 minutes before the court hearing.
Yeah, and they pay him.
My family shows up, and I'm expecting, God, I was there for like a few days. I'm finally going to get out. And then the prosecutor starts telling the court that not only do they have to detain me because I'm a national security threat, but they have to make sure that when I'm in custody, that they don't let me near the phone. And why? Because the prosecutor had told the judge that if I was near a phone in custody, that I could pick up the phone, I can call into NORAD and somehow whistle the modem tones and possibly start a World War III.
You could have the launch codes by whistling.
Yeah. So I started laughing in court because this is the most absurd thing I ever heard in my life. And I figured this guy just burned all his trust and credibility with the court because nobody would believe such, you know, a ridiculous story. But the judge must have bought it hook, line, and sinker.
He believed it. Oh, no. Well,
yeah, she believed it. And I was held in solitary confinement for almost a year.
What?
Based on this myth, yeah.
I mean, so were you sentenced to 1 year at this? How many times did they arrest you, by the way?
A few.
Okay.
As a juvenile, and when I was an adult, it was twice, and it was like a continuing thing. I just never stopped, and I guess the endorphin rush. I had two psychological, quirks. One is I like the endorphin rush of hacking.
Right.
And secondly, I like putting myself in danger and trying to figure a way out.
Well, you know, Kevin, there are people who do all kinds of things in their life. I mean, there are people who are alcoholics, they're drug abusers, they're sexaholics, some are pedophiles. You got off with your computer. That's what fascinated you.
Yeah, and I loved it. I mean, it was a passion, and I was doing this again before it was illegal, and then when they criminalized this stuff, I just kept going and going and going. It was, I don't know if you call it an obsession, if you call it an addiction. It just brought such an endorphin rush. And I was learning things as I was doing this. And my only goal was to become the best at doing these hacks. And even though I was in federal prison in solitary confinement, that didn't even stop me because I figured a way out where I can continue my phone freaking. And what that was is when I was in solitary, I was only allowed to call five people, my mother, my grandmother, my aunt, my lawyer, my wife at the time. And so if I had to make a phone call, the guard would come to my room, he would handcuff me and he would shackle the legs. They'd walk me because I'm in high security. I mean, the highest you could be.
Like you're a murderer.
Like you killed a prison guard.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I mean, you're in the highest. Basically, it's like no human contact type of security. And so they shackle me up. They walk me to this room where there's, payphones there. And the officer, says, who do you want to call? I tell the guy who I want to call. He dials the number. And then he sits down 3 to 4 feet away from me in a chair and just never takes his eyes off me. So you would think that would stop me, but at the time, my wife coincidentally worked for General Telephone, and the only number that was authorized was to call her home number, and she was never home. She was always at work during the day. So what I did is I'd walk back and forth because the handset cords were long. I'd walk back and forth, and I would scratch my back. I'd rub my back against the payphone as if I was always itching or had a rash or something of that nature. And then what I would do is as I'm rubbing my back against the phone, I'd hang up the switch hook, for 2 seconds. I'd put my hand in front of me because I then knew I had dial tone. And as I'm doing this, I'd still be talking as if I'm still talking to the person
right.
I initially called. And then I had 18 seconds before I had to reach back and dial a number, or the phone would go beep, beep, beep.
Exactly, exactly.
So I put my hand behind my back. Again, scratching, rubbing my back against the payphone, I'd redial the number.
So you would dial without even looking at the buttons?
Oh, yeah, it's easy, because I guess if you're an experienced phone freak.
Didn't it make a noise?
Behind your back.
And it didn't make a noise in front of him? When you dial, it goes doot, 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 doot.
Oh, I pressed the phone to my ear so he couldn't hear the DTMF, the touch tones.
Oh, my gosh.
Right, and I'm talking too, so that my voice is drowning out the sound of the tones as I'm pressing the phone to my ear. And then what I would do is I'd be able to, call any number I wanted. And what eventually happened is a few weeks later, my room opens and it's the executives of the prison. Something's wrong.
Yeah.
They shackle me up. They take me to this room that's for attorney interviews. And the guy sits me down. He goes, Mitnick. I go, yes. How are you doing it? And I go, doing what? And he goes, you're somehow redialing the phone. Our officer is dialing the phone. He's watching your every move, and you're somehow calling other people. And I said, what do you think I am, David Copperfield? And they didn't like my sense of humor. They sent me back to the room, and then a couple days later, I'm hearing a noise outside my room. I look outside, they have a trap door where they give you food, and it was Pacific Bell installing a phone jack. A phone jack, and I'm going, are these guys actually going to install a phone in my room and try to restrict it to five numbers? Because obviously that was going to be something to hack, right?
Yeah.
And that's not what happened. I got a little bit of a surprise because the next time I had to make a call, the guard brings the telephone, he plugs it into the wall like a home phone.
Right.
And he dials the number that I want. Then he puts the handset through the trap door and locks it. So the only thing I have in my hand is a handset. I can't even get
you can't do anything at that point.
Right. So I feel like I'm Hannibal Lecter in Silence of the Lambs. And of course, I think the prison system was so embarrassed by what I did, they never told the court. They kept it a secret.
Who would you call when you were doing that?
Oh, I would call like my family, but at different numbers that weren't authorized.
Just to do it, just to have fun.
No, because a lot of times, like my family wasn't at home during the day. They'd be like at work. So I'd call my mom's work, for example. No, because or I'd call my wife at the phone company when she worked at the phone company, or I'd actually called a few friends that weren't on the list, but they were monitoring every call. You know, is what I kind of figured they were doing that, but at the end there was really nothing done that was illegitimate other than making calls to people that weren't on the list.
Were they able to stop you at that point?
Oh yeah, the handset through the trap door.
Yeah.
Not letting my fingers touch that touch tone.
That's right.
They're lucky I could not whistle touch tones.
You would have if you could.
Touch tones, they would be in trouble.
It's bad enough they thought you could whistle launch codes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So I'm sitting there in solitary for this, crazy myth that I could, launch.
One year for that.
About 8.5 months.
One year. These guys on Wall Street have stolen billions. And you get 1 year for playing around with phones and computers. And at that time, not stealing anything from anyone.
Right. Well, I stole source code. I didn't disclose it. I didn't use it, for profit. What I did was I looked at it to become a better hacker. So the crime was stealing source code, and how the government, reacted to that is they wanted to send a message. Because
were you the first one they got?
I believe so. There was another guy that they got simultaneously, but he had a strong family background. His father was the chief scientist at the National Security Agency, a guy named Robert Morris, who launched the first internet worm in 1988 that brought down 10% of the internet. He didn't do it maliciously. He apparently did it by accident, but because of his connections, with government, his dad, chief scientist at NSA, he ended up with 5 years probation, and instead I got 1 year in solitary.
Kevin, we're going to come back in just a moment. Let's find out how they got you the other couple times. You spent 5 years in jail on one episode. I also want to get your reaction to a case called the Gary McKinnon case, where he smashed into NASA and CIA computers, and he's still in jail in the United Kingdom. He claims he just wanted to find out about UFOs. So we'll talk about that, and then we'll talk about hacking in general and what could happen to this planet if people really get into computers. I'm George Norrie. 2 hours to go with Kevin Mitnick on Coast to Coast AM.